Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning show with John and you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, broadcasting live from College Park on this Earth Day as we get ready for the countdown to our coverage of the 2019 NFL Draft from Nashville, Tennessee on Thursday night. Our live coverage will include Mike Conney, so used to talking about soccer. Mike Conney, Randy McMichael, Wes and Dave from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, 7 p.m. until the completion of the first round on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk a little bit about the draft and bring an expert in. The executive director of the Senior Bowl, ESPN draft analyst Jim Nagy, joins us this morning on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Morning to you, Jim.
Jim, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Jim, do you anticipate anything screwy going on in this year's draft?
You know, the only thing that I can think might turn the draft on its head a little bit, one is how the quarterbacks go. I think there's a couple of surprise teams in there that people aren't really thinking about quarterback, like Detroit and Green Bay, that I think could get in. I got the guys there they like. And then I really think, again, if I were drafting for a team, I would go offensive line in the first round because this is a really strong offensive line class. It's been down for years, and this is a really strong class. And we've already started to look ahead at next year for the Senior Bowl, and it's looking like it's going to be thin up there again next year. So I would actually go offensive line and then circle back on the defensive line or tight end, some of the really deeper spots. So I could see 10 to 12 offensive linemen going in the first round.
Hold up now, Jim. Now, back up a little bit, because in the last couple of years, I've been told, and that has been the trend, that the offensive linemen, they don't get that kind of work that they used to get back in the day, so it's kind of hard to draft them now. So what you're telling me is that the trend for offensive linemen has changed, and now you can actually get one that can play on day one in the NFL?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a great class. We had a bunch of guys down the three at the Senior Bowl this year that are going to step in and be day one starters next year. So it's an unusually good class. I've been with the Seahawks the last 5 years, and I think the run problem the last 2 years has been really encouraging, especially for a team that needed offensive line help. This is a great group.
Jim Nagy is the executive director of the Senior Bowl. He's a draft analyst for ESPN. He joins John and Hugh this morning. So let's talk about the Falcons. I know that offensive line was mentioned briefly, but Thomas Dimitroff, Jim, has made it pretty clear to you and I on multiple occasions that he is not inclined to use a first-round pick on an offensive lineman. He just generally doesn't believe in that. And with the Falcons' needs at other positions like defensive tackle, defensive end, and maybe even cornerback, I think I might be surprised if the Falcons went offensive line with that 14th pick. Would you?
Well, you know, the Falcons want to bring in high-character players, and there's a bunch of good ones in this year's draft. And I'm telling you, it is so hard to find offensive linemen these days. Just what John said. I mean, they're not developing them at the college level. So I think it would be really smart, even if that's not their philosophy in Atlanta. Sometimes you got to go against your philosophy when something's laying right out in front of you like this year's draft is. So, again, you know, in the first round with the defensive line, I know that they want to address the needs there, but there's going to be starter-level players on the defensive line into the third round. So I just think that's a position they could address later.
You know what, you've kind of blown my mind now. Now, I don't know what to think, John.
With
you saying that this offensive line class is one of the better class that has been around in a while. So what I'm hearing now is, because when I look at some of these draft boards, there's a lot of defensive linemen going in. And since now you're telling me that there's probably going to be a run on offensive linemen, does that necessarily mean that there's going to be some guys that are going to drop down to the second round? And if so, who do you guess that might be the case? Who might be that guy that might drop to the second round?
Well, I don't even know if they have to drop, John. I mean, there's some really good players in that group. Like Colin Saunders is a nose tackle from – defensive tackle from Western Illinois. He could play the one, he could play the three technique. Really explosive player. he's similar to Sanat, Deidre Sanat, who they drafted last year, but a better player, in my opinion. And I did Sanat coming out of South Florida last year, and he's a good player. I just think Colin Saunders is even a step higher as a player. That second round is going to be loaded with pass rushers. You've got a guy like Anthony Nelson from Iowa, who's not getting a lot of buzz. LJ Collier from TCU. So they're going to get guys that can improve their rush in the second and third rounds if that's where they want to go.
Talking with Jim Nagy, ESPN draft analyst. Draft is Thursday night, round one on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Jim, what do we make of Kyler Murray at the number one pick? Boy, I've never seen, I was saying earlier in the show, never is a strong word, been a long time since I've seen so much uncertainty at the top of the draft board as to whether or not he's going to play baseball, whether or not Arizona's going to pick him, whether or not they're going to trade the pick. It's an uncertain, and we're 3 days out, and I'm not 100%. Are you, the Kyler Murray, will go number one overall?
Well, it sure sounds like that's the direction it's headed. I mean, that's been for over a month now, since around combine time. I think the Cardinals, you know, when they were asked about Kyler around the draft time, I think they let a couple things slip that really tipped their hand on where they wanted to go. But, like, he's really a wild card. I've never scouted a quarterback like him. The closest guy that I've done is Antoine Randle-El when he was coming out of Indiana about, I don't know, 17, 18 years ago. And he was moved immediately to wideout. So, you know, Kyler's just a really unique athlete for that position. And I would have a hard time seeing him not going number one to Arizona at this point.
So out of all the defensive ends that you see in the draft, we all know that the number one defense is the young man from Kentucky. But who do you see in that second tier of potential edge rushers that could go in the first round?
You know, there's a group of them. Like, just, you know, close to down the road from you guys, Cleveland Farrell at Clemson is a guy. I think that Montez Sweat from Mississippi State is a guy that I think is a top 10 talent, but it's probably going to slip because, you know, he's been diagnosed with a heart condition, and that's got some teams worried and you know, some of those things. So I think he's a guy where Atlanta might be staring Montez in the face. And, you know, Montez is I think he's got as big an upside as any rusher in this draft. So there's going to be, like I said, I mean, you go to the LJ Colliers of the world, and, you know, they can, he's very, very much like a Michael Bennett type player that Dan Quinn had in Seattle. He can rush with multiple alignments. So there's players all throughout those first three rounds where they're going to get help. Even a guy like Carl Granderson from Wyoming, who you haven't heard a lot about in the media, but during Senior Bowl week, he was the buzz of the entire National Football League the week down in Mobile. You know, just because he's really twitchy and he's long and he plays incredibly hard. You put on the Senior Bowl game and you get tired watching the guy because he's just chasing every play. So, like I said, they're going to be able to address that need, and it doesn't have to be in the first.
Jim Nagy, ESPN draft analyst, joining John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, talking ahead of the NFL draft on Thursday. Jim, as you talk about the depth, and we'll just focus in on the defensive end position, whether it's a Furl or a Burns or any of the guys that you brought up here with Sweat and whatnot, and at the defensive tackle position, if the Falcons feel that they can go into round two and get a guy that can help them with their pass rush in that second round, as you've talked about, does that open the Falcons up to potentially getting a cover corner, Baker or Williams, Greedy Williams or DeAndre Baker, with that first pick? And if so, what do you like about those two guys? Do they both have the ability to step in and be, you know, starters for you from day one?
I'm actually lower on both those guys than probably a lot of people in the media are. I think that would be a stretch. That'd be a reach for the Falcons where they're picking to take either of those guys. I think the one corner that really should carry a first round grade is Rocky Upton from Temple. You know, he's probably going to go somewhere in the 20s. I think he's a more complete player than both the guys you brought up. Really long, twitchy, really tough as nails. I know Dan Quinn's going to love the toughness aspect of Rock. You know, he went to Presbyterian College, which is kind of close to you guys over there in South Carolina, and was a one-year player this year at Temple. So, you know, he's got some technique stuff that he's a little behind with, which you would understand being a small school player. But showed really well at the Senior Bowl. And just talking to guys in the league, he's the one that's the cleanest of all the corners that the teams feel the best about.
Talking with Jim Nagy about the NFL draft. So, Jim, tell me, who are Who are the guys at the top of the draft that you think are the real game changers that we're going to be talking about 3-4 years from now
difference
as all
makers.
Pro? I mean, the real guys. Is it Bosa? Is it Williams? Is it somebody else that we're missing at the top of the draft? Is it Ed Oliver?
Well, I think the best player in the draft is Quinnen Williams from Alabama. I think that he's just scratching the surface. You know, a kid that didn't play a ton before this year, and a lot of people say, well, is he a one-year wonder? Well, I don't think there's one-year wonders at Alabama. I mean, he was sitting behind a bunch of first-round picks and learning, and came out this year as an interior defensive lineman and had 9 sacks in the SEC. He's slippery, powerful, really hard to block. I think Josh Allen from Kentucky would be the next guy for me. I'm not as quite as high on Bosa as most people are. When you work down through that top 10, two of the cleanest players in the draft are Devin White and Devin Bush, the two linebackers from LSU and Michigan. I think both those guys are going to be exceptional pros.
All right, Jim, we do appreciate your taking a few minutes, giving us some insight. You gave us a lot to chew on.
Yes, you did.
With that offensive line.
And the fact that I'm thinking now, the Falcons might get an offensive lineman in the first round. I don't think so, but when you say it like that, that's something to chew on.
Guys, they're really hard to find. Offensive line are really hard to find, and this is an unusually strong class. So I'm just saying they couldn't go wrong going that way because we've already started doing our work on next year, and it's looking lean.
Thank you, Jim. Do appreciate.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Jim Nagy from ESPN, of course, executive director of the Senior Bowl. Boy, I was not expecting that, Hugh.
Nah, me neither. It kind of blew my mind when he said that. But again, John, I had to be honest. I don't like when it comes to offensive linemen. I don't really watch them guys that much, you know, because they all. I look at them as box guys, guys that play in a box,
well, Jonathan,
guys that are you know technique guys.
Jonathan Williams is the number one offensive lineman in the nation on everybody's board, and the last time we saw him was in the national title game against Clemson.
Getting worked like a shift.
Right, exactly. He was back on his butt. He was getting hammered by that Clemson defensive line. So,
yeah.
I mean, you tell me about how great these offensive linemen are. You better not miss. If you're going to go offensive lineman, you better not miss. But, see, here's why I cannot see the Falcons going offensive line. Maybe they shock me, Hugh. Maybe on Thursday night they do take an offensive lineman number one. You have to have – we are – it's like some of the draft analysts don't necessarily – they only look at, you know, what is a good fit for the team or what potentially could be a good fit for the team down the road. They're not taking into account something that I think we're taking into account, where you have to have your first two picks come in and immediately, I mean immediately, impact this team because they're under stress to get something done this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, you know, with that first pick, I don't honestly feel like the Falcons have the luxury of allowing a first-round draft pick to sit on the bench and learn. And, you know, a lot of people are saying that. I just had a fan come up to us up here at the Metro Atlanta Urban Farm and talk to me about potentially getting an offensive lineman in the first round and having him sit for a year. And everything that I have read, everything that I have heard said doesn't lead me to believe that the Falcons are looking at it as a position where, oh, you know, we'll get a first-round pick and he'll sit. Everything that they've done in the past since Coach Quinn has been here has been guys that come in the first round and contribute immediately. Guys in the second round, guys in the third round. They've drafted in a way that they don't draft guys to sit back and not be a part of what they're trying to accomplish. And the only reason I think that they're not going to get an offensive lineman, because when you think of offensive linemen historically in the NFL, they don't come off the field. It's not like you're going to be two platooning. Say if you want to get a young guard, you're not going to be two platooning the young guard. You're not going to do that. And if he doesn't win the job outright in the summer during training camp, then he's not going to play unless he's pressed into duty, i.e. injury, but we don't need any more of those. That's the only reason I say that. On the defensive line, the way that they rotate, there's more of an opportunity there for you to get in and not only get playing time, but if you show that you can stick and stay, that you'll get more playing time. Grady Jarrett was one of those guys. You know, he was one of the guys that you looked at that he was in a rotation. He became the starter. On the defensive side of the ball, there's more of an opportunity to get that done as opposed to playing offense, because on the offensive line, you got 5 offensive linemen, and they're on the field as much as the quarterback. They're on the field all the time. Only person that changes is the receivers and the running back.
Yeah, he did say a name that you as a Falcons fan ought to know, Rock Ya-Sin. Y-A-S-I-N, Rock Ya-Sin out of Temple, is a cornerback that a lot of people really like. And if he wants to get a cornerback, it would not – look, if they decide to go quarterback, Hugh, and they want Rock Ya-Sin, they could actually draft and trade down a couple of spots to, say, 18 or so and get Rock Ya-Sin and pick up another pick. That wouldn't shock me if they did that. I'd be much more surprised if they took it off.
I tell you, man, but whatever. It's going to be exciting to have some young studs up in here that's going to help these Atlanta Falcons and us try to make that run again to the Super Bowl this year, John freaking.
Our coverage of the NFL Draft is brought to you by Northern Tool and Equipment. The latest team updates, of course, on 92.9thegame.com, all sponsored by Northern Tool and Equipment. Take advantage of huge savings at northerntool.com. The draft, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, round one Thursday night. Coverage begins with Dukes and Bell, 2 to 7 at Mercedes-Benz, followed by our live coverage from 7 to the end of round one with Mike Conney, Randy Mack, Wes Durham, and Dave Archer. When we get back in a moment, Mike Conney, the aforementioned, will peek ahead to the draft, and we'll talk to him about what now with Atlanta United. The man of many hats is next after a CBS Sports Minute and Boomer Esiason.
It's John and Hugh.
Yes, my vote.
Go!
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Up to the halfway line where it'll be controlled by Barrios. And now Barrios dribbles around Lorenowitz and Shea. Streaks down the right wing, plays it to the penalty spot. Ferreira shot, score. Atlanta United concedes in the sixth minute. Beautiful goal in transition converted by Ferreira, his third goal of the year.
Mike Conney on Saturday night from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Mike Conney's interview brought to you by Brightbox Electrical. Atlanta's unshockingly good electricians, but shockingly good was not what Atlanta United was in the first 6 minutes of the game against FC Dallas. Again, another breakdown that put him behind the eight ball, and for all of the onslaught, Atlanta United couldn't get it into the net. Just a heart-wrenching kind of a game. Mike Conney joins us this morning on the telephone, getting ready for the big draft party on Saturday night, rather Thursday night. What am I thinking about? But let's respond first to Atlanta United. Morning to you, Mike.
Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, good. So, Mike, tell me a little bit about what in the world is going on in the first 5 or 6 minutes of the game where Atlanta United is having breakdowns on its back line. It's not the first time this has happened.
No, it's not. And this has created the problem for Atlanta United where when they give up that early goal, it allows their opponent to kind of go into a low block, put 10 guys behind the ball, and it's been impossible for Atlanta United to play through that and get an equalizer. So they just can't afford to give up these early goals. And I think like what you saw in Columbus, it's an individual mistake. You know, Atlanta United, this is one of the problems now when you send so many people forward. And that's been the philosophy for Atlanta United the last couple weeks. They're trying to attack. They're trying to get guys forward. But you can get caught out in transition. You can get caught on the counter very, very easily. And then you can ill afford to have a one-on-one mistake. You had a mistake by a midfielder in Columbus. You had a mistake by a defender in the sixth minute against Dallas. That's what produced the goal. And that allowed FC Dallas to start playing negatively, start that time-wasting machine that a lot of teams like to employ when they're at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and they get a lead. And Atlanta United's got to be better. They've got to find ways to convert these chances, but you reduce the odds of being able to convert when you allow teams to go into a low block against you, and that's what you do when you give up an early goal.
Boy, I tell you what, it is just so frustrating to have Barco, you know, hit the post, hit the crossbar, all the woodwork, and so close to connecting on, I don't know, what, 6-7 goals it seemed against FC Dallas, and you couldn't get it in either. Either it was a great save, a just miss, or something. Man, what do you do, Mike? I mean, you're right there. It just is not going in the net.
Yeah, and that's why I think you don't panic if you're asking what do you do, because you see these numbers now proving that every match you're getting better as far as creating chances, getting shots, putting shots on frame. I could go into a long explanation about what the expected goal statistic means, but essentially it measures the quality of a chance coming from a specific part of the field, if it's off your foot, off your head, whatever. Atlanta United's expected goal number has gone up every week. It was a season high on Saturday, 2.6 against FC Dallas. They only got one. Now, that's a big problem when you're way, way below your expected goal metric. But just for perspective, last year, the 2018 team averaged 1.9 expected goals per game. So you're over that average from last year over the last couple weeks. That's why that's encouraging. And that's why I wouldn't panic yet, because these kinds of misses are not going to happen every week. Joseph had a sitter at the end of regulation on Saturday. I mean, Joseph never, ever does that. Barco off the woodwork twice. That's frustrating. You know, Gonzalez, their keeper, made a couple really nice diving saves. You have to give credit to him. So that's frustrating, because you're doing a good job creating the chances. You aren't converting them. But that's why I think you need to stay true to what you've been doing the last couple weeks, because I don't think anyone can argue. If you compare this team now compared to the way they played against Cincinnati in their home opener the first or second weekend of March, it is clearly better. You're close. You're not there yet. It's not good enough yet, and that's what's frustrating. But that's why I wouldn't really abandon your philosophy at this point.
Mike Honey joining us this morning. And Mike, we'll talk more about United in a moment, but Hugh's been chomping at the bit to ask you a question about the NFL draft, because we've been throwing a little bit of a curveball here, because I know you're going to be hosting our draft coverage by our last guest, who said something that Hugh and I spent the better part of the break talking about.
You know, Mike Honey, he basically dropped the bomb on us and said that this is the year that, for whatever reason, there's a plethora of really good offensive linemen. So do you think there's a chance that the Atlanta Falcons might draft an offensive lineman after we talked about all these defensive linemen and corners for all this time?
I think, Hugh, and you know, I say this without having had a one-on-one discussion with Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, so I can't get into their head. I think on their board, they have probably identified, what would you say, maybe five or six defensive linemen, either tackles or ends, probably another four or five corners. There they are sitting at 14. I think they'll take a look at their board when they get to 14. And if their guys are all off the board at defensive line and corner, I think they trade down. And then by trading down, that maybe makes it a little more comfortable for them to select an offensive lineman late in the first round, or if you get a couple second-round picks, you can use one there. You know, I don't think the Falcons have this philosophical thing going on in the organization that they're just completely opposed to drafting an offensive lineman in the first round. I think that's been thrown out there. I don't think that's an organizational philosophy. I think they want to get the best players available for their system. But I heard that too on my way in, and I think it's very interesting. I think it's an intriguing possibility, because there are still, I think, question marks. You know, you've tried to address your needs on the offensive line and free agency, but have you necessarily done that with proven talent? Not sure. So I think it all comes down to who's still on the board at 14, and if they don't have a defensive tackle there that they like, they don't have a corner there that they like, then I think they would be just fine moving back and then reevaluating that need for an offensive lineman.
Of course, Mike Conney is the voice of Atlanta United, but he's also hosting our draft coverage on Thursday night beginning at 7 o'clock with Wes Durham and Dave Archer and Randy McMichael. You think there's any chance, because CBS said yesterday that they see Atlanta United in their latest mock draft making a big, bold move up to number five, up to number five, Mike, to draft Ed Oliver?
I think you're giving up way too much to do that, in my opinion. I think you've got to look at this now from the standpoint of where you are salary-wise the next couple years. I think, you know, your quantity of players on a rookie deal is more important than mortgaging future drafts to move up and get a guy like Ed Oliver. Just my opinion. And I know that's not a fun thing to think about, but, you know, you're going to have to pay Julio Jones. If you want to keep Grady Jarrett, you're going to have to pay him. You can't keep franchising him. You know, there is value to drafting smart late first round, through the second round, into the third round, finding guys there, kind of that Seattle Seahawks model, where you find quality early in the draft and you have as many rookie contracts as possible to kind of weather this storm through the Matt Ryan, the term of the Matt Ryan deal, the term of the Julio Jones deal, Grady Jarrett, whatever. If you're moving up to five from 14, what's that going to take? Probably your first this year, maybe a first next year, and maybe another, like, early to mid-round pick. I don't think it's worth it. Just my opinion.
You know, Mike, I got to say, man, since we've been working together, you are the most practical person at the station that's also a fan of all of our teams. So, seriously, you are, because you never think with your heart, you think with your head. So, with that being said, Mike Conti, Who do you think? I don't need a name, but what do you think the position is first that the Falcons take off the board at 14?
Defensive tackle, if there's one there. And again, I understand, and Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn both said last Thursday when they met with the media, we feel like, we meaning them, we feel like we have addressed our needs in free agency, and that will give us flexibility in this draft. But just knowing Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, and especially DQ, and the position that he values, it's defensive tackle. I think if there's one there that fits on their draft board, they're going in that direction. Like I said, I think they're going defensive tackle or corner, and if all of their favorite defensive tackles and corners are off the board at 14, then they're moving back and maybe taking the best player available late in the first round.
Mike Honey joining us. Mike, I want to move back to Atlanta United. You know, we could talk about how close they are and how many chances that they're generating, or their possession time, or this or that, but they got to get a win at home.
Yeah.
Saturday night, you got the Colorado Rapids coming in. You've got to win at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Mike. Play it simple.
Yeah, and Colorado's the worst team in the league, so absolutely. The thing that I'm scared about, John, and this is something that Jason brought up at the end of the broadcast on Saturday night, is Colorado knowing that they don't have the same type of quality, the same type of roster depth as Atlanta United, is probably going to come into Mercedes-Benz Stadium and play a 5-4-1, and that's not going to be pretty soccer. That's going to be nine men behind the ball. Atlanta United is going to have to play through that, and that's why I think it's vital that you can get Franco Escobar and George Bello back into the 11. And that might be a difficult ask because Bello still hasn't even been in the 18 yet. But if you get those two in, then you aren't quite as compact going forward. You're a little wider, and maybe that opens up some space in the final third. But Colorado is going to come in all likelihood and play very defensive-minded, very negatively. And that is going to be a challenge for Atlanta United to break that down because, as we've seen against Cincinnati, as we've seen against Dallas, certainly Atlanta United has not really been able to play through that yet. If that's the philosophy of Colorado, I worry. I think Atlanta United can get a result and probably can get a win, but it might not look pretty. And I think not only do they need a win right now at home, John, they need one of those pretty exciting, fast-paced wins that we saw last year at home, because I think that will get everyone, not within the club, but certainly the fans, the supporters, in a much, much better place mentally.
Mike Conti, real quick. Did you watch Game of Thrones last night? And if you did, what did you think of that episode?
I did not watch it, but I saw your tweet about someone maybe not having her clothes on, and maybe I'm going to have to go back and watch that now.
Yeah, but hey, Mike, if you've been watching the show, man, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
It's a little creepy.
Well, I haven't seen a single episode yet, so maybe I can come in on this one.
Yeah, you probably could. You probably could. And with that being said, John Freaky, I want to talk a little bit about Game of Thrones.
All right, we'll do that. Mike Conti will be talking NFL Draft 7 o'clock Thursday night live from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
All righty, Game of Thrones update. There's nakedness in Game of Thrones?
A little bit.
Oh,
it was some creepy nakedness. I'm going to talk about that on the other side.
All right, as we continue next, live from College Park with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, John Freaky. Watched Game of Thrones last night, man. And I tell you what, the first episode of Game of Thrones, I was a little bit disappointed. And I was disappointed about the episode last night, but I understand what they're doing. They're giving us a lot of background and a lot of context for things that have happened in the past. And then you got to think, John, after this, they only got four episodes left. And after this, this is when it gets real. And I'm gonna talk around this episode as much as I possibly can.
By the way, what is Winter is Coming?
Winter's here.
What's that mean?
Winter's here is mean that the White Walkers are here. The Wits are here. The Night King is here. And it was great the way that they ended the episode last night, because if you were like me, people, when you saw the end of that episode, you were just like, wow, it's about to go down. It's about – because, like, this is one of those ones where you're going to be floating through this week. You're probably – people that have watched Game of Thrones probably are not going to get nothing done. Nothing done this week, because they're going to be waiting for two things. Marvel Endgame coming Thursday, and then they're getting ready for Game of Thrones. But, John, last night, the episode it was one of those episodes last night that made you think, because there was a lot that transpired that went on in that episode. I'm trying to talk around it. That it's going to transition. It's going to go one way or another. And it was funny because I was reading about the guy that actually wrote the story of Game of Thrones, and he was talking about how, you know how in the cowboy movies, black and white, they had symbolic meanings.
Sure.
Like the bad guys always wore black, and the good guys always wore white. Now, keep that in mind, because if you're watching the episode, they are really playing on this really well, because last night, Sansa Stark, she was wearing the all black. And if you notice, Daenerys Stormborn, she's been wearing white a lot lately. And if you notice that the Starks and Jon Snow, before he became Eddard Targaryen, he was wearing a lot of black. They were wearing a lot of dark colors. Don't let that fool you, though. That's the thing that I can give you from that. Don't let that fool you, because he was saying that in this story, that means nothing.
Well, aren't the White Walkers bad people?
Well, the White Walkers are, but don't read too much into it as far as the antagonists and the characters go.
Okay.
Because if you watched that episode last night, John, they've been playing a lot with the color schemes of certain individuals and the conversation that's being had. But there was something that happened last night that had me and my man Carl Duke. Shout out to my man Carl Duke, Dukes of Bell, Hey Man L, all of that, that we were talking about this morning. Now, I think I can tell this because everybody's on the internet talking about it. There was a scene last night where, you know, they're getting ready for war, and Arya Stark take off her clothes. She took off her clothes, John. Now, this is the problem that I had with that scene. Now, she's a grown woman now. She's a grown woman. But the problem that I had with the scene was this. We've been watching this Game of Thrones for 7 whole seasons. This is the 8th season.
Okay.
And we've watched this young lady grow up from the time she was a little girl when she saw her dad beheaded and the journey that she went on to become this master killer that she is right now, to basically getting her wild, wild thought on last night. She got it. Well, oh, I guess I spoiled it for everybody. But if you ain't watched Game of Thrones, you ain't no real Game of Thrones fan, so I ain't really tripping. If you ain't watched Game of Thrones last night, then that's on you. I don't care if you had to work or anything. You should have stayed your butt
so
up
you're
and watched Game of Thrones.
You look at this.
But
girl,
last night,
this
Arya,
little girl got naked, right?
Arya Stark transitioned into womanhood last night.
All right.
And okay, I'm sorry, Daryl, but this is an important part. I'm not telling, I'm just saying she transitioned to womanhood. And I turned away. I didn't look at the episode. I couldn't watch that. And everybody looking at me like I'm crazy. I couldn't. Because it's like seeing somebody that you watch grow up from a little girl to watch her become a blossom into a woman. Man, I ain't trying to see that, man. I felt real creepy. I turned away. I couldn't watch that, man. But there's a lot of guys that last night that said that they watched that. And you guys are creepy. You guys are creepy because you watch this young – I know she's 22. She's grown. But we watched this young lady grow up from a little girl all the way to womanhood. And you know what? She knew exactly what she wanted to. I'm just saying. John Friggy. She did not – hey, listen. She was so grown. In that episode she was in, it was so – that's probably what it was. It was one of those episodes where – you watch the transition of the character. You know how it is, character development. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see it in movies. It happens a lot faster. We've watched this progress over a span of 7 years, well, 8 years technically, because they held us off for 2 years. And to watch her grow like that and be in that situation and be as specific as she was, that was too much reality TV for me. So I had to tune out of that. I hope I did not spoil it that much for a lot of people, because there was a lot of other stuff that went on in that episode last night that was really, really good, man. Because now you know, and the sad part about it is, John Freaking, that next week there's probably going to be some Vegas lines. We got to check that. It's going to be some Vegas lines. There's going to be some cats that are going to die, some main characters that are going to die. And my man Grey Worm. I just want to put that shout out to my man Grey Worm. Everybody that watched Game of Thrones know exactly what I'm talking about. Gray worm. My bad. Before this slip. Gray Worm has, you know, he's let his intentions be known. That's all I'm going to say about that. But Gray Worm has let his intentions be known. So he stepped his game up. So he's ready to transition. He's ready to do some different things once they take care of business.
And meantime.
In the meantime,
you missed on Billions is that they had to remind everybody that Axe really is a bad, bad dude. They had to go full reminder.
See, John, you got to tell us more about Billions. I got to watch. I haven't watched.
Is a bad, bad dude.
I haven't watched Billions.
Well, Axe was a really bad, bad dude, and Bobby Axelrod, and then they kind of softened him up over the last. Yeah, they. Oh, we might want to remind everybody.
I heard.
He's
Billions
a bad, bad dude.
But I don't think Billions can fool with Game of Thrones, though.
Well, they're different.
Yeah, and not right now, though, because it's about to get real. It's about to get so real that if I knew somebody that worked at HBO that I could get that out the can and watch it this week, I would definitely try to call in a favor to see that one, John, because it's gonna be a really, really good episode. Cannot wait to this Sunday.
Hey, you know what I thought was kind of cool? Did I see where they said there were 6 Iron Thrones spread around the world?
Around the world, and you got to find them.
4 have been found?
Yeah, you got to find them. And I don't know if any of them here in America. I'm pretty sure they are, but I would venture to say they're probably New York or L.A.
Yeah, they put an Iron Throne somewhere, and you just had to find it around the world.
They didn't say if you won anything or not. They just put the Iron Throne somewhere.
Who will sit on the Iron Throne of the first pick of the NFL draft?
Boom.
King Kyler, I guess. Counting down, I guess. King Kyler the first. Counting down to the NFL draft on Thursday night. Coming up midday show as we continue live from College Park on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.